This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. A recent survey of Texas Republican primary voters showed overwhelming support for key criminal justice reforms. They said they wanted to have less harsh punishments for those dealing with drug possession, and they want more opportunities for rehabilitation and treatment. For more about what that means, we're joined by Doug Smith, senior policy analyst with the Texas Criminal Justice Coalition. And Doug Smith, welcome to The Source.
Thank you, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing great, sir. Our phone lines are open. If you've got a question or a comment about criminal justice reforms, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And so, Doug Smith, tell me about what this survey found.
Well, we were really excited about the survey. It showed that Republican primary voters had a very sophisticated and nuanced view with respect to criminal justice, that they did support definitely lowering penalties on possession of small amounts of drugs, but that was a highly nuanced finding in that it's not just that Republicans wanted lower penalties, they also wanted people to get help. And we thought that was really important. We're arresting about 34,000 people every year in Texas on low-level possession. And most of those cases are handled through some form of incarceration, either in county jail, state jail, or a prison commitment. And 7,000 of them go on to our state jail system where they're not even connected with any type of rehabilitative programming, and they're released often to the same circumstances, no aftercare. We're spending about $63 million to incarcerate those folks, and for that we get about a 62.7% rearrest rate. And so the findings were that 76% of Republican voters favored lowering penalties, but this was even more important. 83% believed that we need to connect those individuals with some form of treatment where they can get those underlying needs addressed. You know, what was really interesting about that was that that was actually how Republican voters defined public safety. So they weren't defining public safety as merely arresting and incarcerating someone. They were defining public safety as getting people the help they need so they don't cycle in and out of the system.
But so people, when they think about public safety, they're automatically going to think about a reduction in violent crime, particularly. And actually, right now, Texas has seen a drop in violent crime.
Absolutely. We've seen reductions in violent crime. And you know, some of the other findings from this survey was that Republican voters had some pretty nuanced and sophisticated views with respect to violent crime as well. So most believe that incarceration is appropriate for violent crime, but for those who are convicted of violent crimes, Republicans favored making sure that people leave prison with opportunities, that they're given the opportunity to address whatever led them into prison through rehabilitation, that they're held accountable for the crime, that they're given access to meaningful trades, and that when they're released, that they have the ability to do things as simple as getting a license to work that trade that you might have learned inside of prison. So, yes, people believed in accountability. Absolutely, we all do. But Republicans also favor rehabilitation.
Right. So you keep talking about the nuance and approach to this and a greater understanding of, but this is something that requires a depth of understanding and a nuanced approach to figuring out what kind of criminal justice reforms will give us the greatest possibility for the outcomes that we desire, particularly when it comes to juvenile justice. Texas is one of only a handful of states that still convicts people at 17 of adult crimes and put them in adult prison. And that year between 17 and 18, when they are in the adult prison, we find that they're these individuals are preyed upon, and they lose all opportunities for rehabilitation that they would have had if they had been into the juvenile justice system.
Absolutely, yes. Texas is falling behind when it comes to youth justice. There were a number of reforms in 2007, and so we were able to decrease the use of youth facilities. But even those youth facilities that do remain continue to be understaffed. And as you noted, we continue to consider people above the age of 17 as adults if they commit a criminal offense. And it's an absolute nightmare if you send a 17-year-old into the adult system, whether you're sending that 17-year-old into an actual facility or putting that 17-year-old into adult probation. Both yield pretty abysmal outcomes. So as you noted, when you put a 17-year-old into prison, you know, there may be youth-type programs, but the statistics are pretty clear that individuals aren't given access to the same type of robust services that they might have received in a more regional youth-type approach. And they're often released without those needs addressed. And so one of the predictors of future criminal activity is whether a 17-year-old was incarcerated at the age of 17. So, you know, we definitely need to change that. But we also need to look at the fact that if a 17-year-old is considered an adult and placed on probation, which is considered the primary means by which we divert people, that most 17-year-olds placed on adult probation are revoked and sent to prison. So we're just not getting it right when it comes to young adults. So we definitely encourage the state, or just urge the state, to raise the age up to 18 and make sure that 17-year-olds are connected with youth services or juvenile probation services that are far more robust and more capable of addressing their needs at the developmental level where they are.
The big selling point for many with this reform that's being considered is how this is or will take a burden off the taxpayers. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. We find that in the possession cases. As I said, we're already spending $63 million every year just to put the 7,000 people arrested for low-level possession in our state jail facilities. So when I say low-level possession, I'm talking about less than 1 gram of a controlled substance, which is about the size of a sugar pack. So for that offense, which isn't dealing, it's not burglary, anything like that, it's just merely possessing, they'll serve up to 2 years in a state jail facility. It costs upwards of nearly $60 a day to incarcerate someone in a state jail facility.
Okay, so we're going to take a break right now. We'll come back. We're going to talk more with Doug Smith with the Texas Criminal Justice Coalition, talking about proposed reforms that apparently has found approval, widespread and deep support from Republican primary voters. We'll find out more about this poll that was given, the survey that was given to these voters, and what changes could be coming, will be proposed for in the next legislative session. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Source continues after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The Texas Smart on Crime Coalition has announced a release of their 2018 Texas Republican Primary Voter Survey, polling data that shows strong Texas voter support for key criminal justice reforms, and that's just ahead of the Texas 86th legislative session. We're talking to Doug Smith about that. He's a senior policy analyst with the Texas Criminal Justice Coalition, and our phone lines are open. If you've got a question or a comment, if you want to issue your support or have about these reforms, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. John is on the line. And John, welcome to The Source, sir. You're on the air.
Thank you. I was really hoping to hear some actual numbers from your guest about how many people were on this survey, what the percentage increase is, how that compares to other years, instead of just this vague language of increase in support, more support, et cetera, et cetera. And then maybe that'll help us be able to decide why we should allow 34,000 criminals back into the community instead of compelling them to get the health care that they need through the incarceration system, which is not just locking away, throwing them in there and locking away the key, by the way.
All right, John, thank you so much for that question. So do you have some more data about how the survey was conducted, how many people were contacted, and the trend?
Well, we'll put more of that data up onto our website for sure, because there's so much in that question. But it was we were primarily focused on Texas primary voters within primarily Republican districts in order to more accurately capture what Republicans' attitudes were. So we can definitely put some of the numbers up on the website. I would like to...
Well, let me just answer that question, though, from the data I have in front of me. More than 600 Texas sure. Republican primary voters were surveyed between March 7th and 11th between 2018. So the number is 600, and 37% of the participants identified as very conservative, 35 as somewhat conservative, and 21% as moderate.
I'd like to connect with the other, or rather address kind of the second part of that question and the idea of placing people back on the streets. So, yes, 34,000 people were arrested for possession. Now, we can debate whether or not we view those individuals as criminals, as the caller said. It appears that Republican primary voters weren't really willing to make that characterization, that they believed that these were individuals that were better served within the community. Now, the truth is that when an individual is incarcerated either in county jail or in state jail, that they do not indeed access services, that there may be a faith-based program here or an education program there, but they are not evidence-based. And what the evidence says is that community-based treatment produces a 40-60% increased likelihood that that person will recover and get back on their feet. So I'd also like to point out that when you try to provide health care, as the individual said, inside of a prison or jail facility, that it's a squandering of very limited resources. The state is not able to utilize Medicaid funds or any community health funds in order to serve that individual, whereas serving the person in community, there's a greater array of funding sources. And what we know is that the evidence is clear that when the person served in the community, they are far more likely to succeed and far less likely to commit future crimes.
So, Doug Smith, I watched the online press conference from the Capitol where y'all announced this survey, and you spoke about your own personal experience in the criminal justice system, and I was wondering if you could share a little bit of that here.
Yes, I'd be happy to. I will share that I myself had a pretty severe problem with substance use disorder and mental health issues, and I made some pretty tragic mistakes in how I was dealing with that. I ended up self-medicating and descending into full-scale drug addiction, and I ended up committing crimes out of desperation for more drugs. And I did have to serve time. I always say that I do not blame the drug addiction for landing me in prison, that I take responsibility for those actions, because there's a lot of people with very serious problems with mental health and drug addiction who don't go committing crimes out of desperation for more drugs. So I take responsibility for that. I think what really impacted me while I was serving my time and really working towards rehabilitation was the number of people I met while I was in prison who were never offered any meaningful programming, that oftentimes they were arrested. They may have done time in county jail and then ultimately wound up in prison, or they were never offered pretrial intervention, never offered probation, never offered drug court. and they never really had access to healthcare services like treatment within their community. These are lives that could have been changed in a much more positive direction, and instead they're doing time. So, you know, I'm really passionate about making sure that we are able to connect people with services, preferably before they ever are arrested. But if they are arrested, that making sure that people are connected with substance use treatment or mental health supports as soon as possible upon arrest, because that's when we know it makes the most difference.
Okay, another caller, and this is Tony. Tony, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. As of right now, you know, let's say that you're arrested, you get caught with, or 20 some odd years ago with maybe some marijuana or something like that. Well, that stays on your record forever. It doesn't matter whether you committed a violent crime or a minor crime. And I think that needs to be changed where if you don't have a violent continuous criminal record, let's say you got caught with some marijuana or maybe alcohol-related violation, DWI, 25 years ago, why that should still be on your record, why there isn't a way to expunge that off of your record.
All right, Tony, thank you for that call. So, Doug Smith, can you talk about the long-term effects on someone's life for having a conviction that they may have committed in their 20s, and now that they're, you know, much longer in the tooth, they still got to deal with those that record?
Well, he's absolutely right. I mean, it in these days where people have access to everyone's criminal records, you know, it doesn't matter whether you committed a low-level misdemeanor or a more serious felony. That criminal record shows up, and it can impact your ability to get a job, to get an apartment, to be able to get a license. There's about 181 licenses that have exclusions for criminal records. So that's quite a number of professions where people really can't access just by virtue of a mistake they may have made 10, 20 years ago, and it really never goes away. People do have the ability to get expunction on certain misdemeanor offenses or when people go through a pretrial intervention, and non-disclosure on certain types of offenses like misdemeanors or low-level felonies. But it's extraordinarily difficult. It's very limited. So we definitely saw within the poll results that Republicans highly favor making sure that people have access to licenses, that if there are exclusions based on criminal records, that they are either removed or that people are given the opportunity to explain, to actually demonstrate evidence of rehabilitation before you decline someone's license.
Right. So, but this is going to require I hire a lawyer, I spend some money, I have those resources, and I engage with the criminal justice system in order to get that to happen. And that's not something that many people can do. Let's go to the next caller, Alfonso. And Alfonso, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
I'd like to know, how does it justify that somebody who could afford drugs should get my taxpayer money for a program that's free to them when I should be able to decide that my taxpayer money should go to maybe schools or hospital or, you know, tax break within the property taxes? I mean.
Okay, Alfonso, thank you for the call. Doug Smith.
Well, I definitely agree that those are higher priority funding. Those are higher funding priorities, schools, hospitals, things of that nature. The truth is that when we do arrest someone, it is extraordinarily expensive, that the taxpayers do pay for it, and they pay for it in the most ineffective way possible. It costs up to $97 to arrest someone and book them into county jail. A county jail spends about $150 of the county money per booking. It costs about $96 per jail bed day to house someone in your county jail, squandering your county tax dollars. And if someone's sent on to prison, it costs up to $60 a day. So this is really a question about prudent use of resources. Do we want to spend tens of thousands of dollars to incarcerate someone who is who has a substance use disorder, or do we want to spend a fraction of that amount connecting that person with services that keeps them from cycling in and out of the system? And when that question was posed to Republican primary voters, they agreed that treatment instead of incarceration was a more prudent use of resources.
So the poll asked the Republican primary voters, and these are the only voters that really matter in Texas, because they decide who's going to be basically get elected in this state, and because we know the Republican rule that we have here. And so having this support, this depth of support, you think that's going to make a difference in the legislature?
We do. So we've already, Smart on Crime has already been conducting stakeholder groups across the state. We've brought in members of the legislature, prosecutors. We brought in judges, district judges, county judges, and county commissioners. We brought in sheriff, law enforcement, formerly incarcerated people, and reentry providers. And we've had some in-depth discussions about how we can chart a path to getting people help on the front end instead of incarcerating them. And by and large, law enforcement, prosecutors are really moving in this direction. Oftentimes, what's standing in their way is a lack of resources at the local level, because we spend so much on our criminal justice system, it's hard to shift those funds out of the criminal justice system into systems that are far more effective. We heard from law enforcement officers that said that they would be happy to not arrest someone on a possession case if they had a way to connect them with services, if they had a referral source. Oftentimes they don't, and jail is the only alternative for them.
So how do we make sure that these opportunities for restorative justice and treatment are available to all and not just for certain members of society, that these opportunities are colorblind?
That is a fantastic question, and that's one that I think we're all going to have to contend with in our communities. One thing that Harris County or Houston is doing quite well is that when people are arrested on possession, that all of the cases, not just a select few, but all of the cases are diverted to a reentry court, and that court is really geared towards addressing that person's needs, making sure that person gets connected with services. The judge himself, Judge Brock Thomas, does a marvelous job of understanding that he's dealing with addiction, he's dealing with homelessness, he's dealing with real needs, and make sure that defendants are connected with peer support, with treatment, he understands that it might take a while. It might take that person making a couple mistakes before they really get it right. So, but the real key was to handle all of the cases in that more evidence-based manner, as opposed to just a select few.
Doug Smith is the senior policy analyst with the Texas Criminal Justice Coalition. They rolled out their survey results that showed widespread support among Republican primary voters for reforms in the criminal justice system. When we come back from the break, we're going to be talking to Matt Beebe, Republican runoff candidate for Texas House District 121. And the number to call in is 210-614-8980. The source continues after this quick break. Stay tuned.